So we're beginning our study of Masechet Kiddushin, which is the tractate that on its face deals with Kiddushin, which is marriage. But later on, we'll deal with a lot of the laws pertaining to all sorts of transactions. Just because the legal mechanism by which Kiddushin is enacted is a financial transaction. That's the handing of the ring and the lifting up of the of an item. And we'll get more into that next week when we read the first Mishnah in Kiddushin. But first, I think that it's important to really examine what is the philosophy of Kiddushin in Halacha before we can delve into the legal details. And I think that the primary way of trying to see the philosophy of a mitzvah, or at least to see the very basic philosophy, is to look at the bracha that we make on that mitzvah. Because when the rabbis coined a bracha, when they formulated a bracha, they had in mind to include the major themes of the mitzvah in the bracha. And you can analyze the language of the bracha in order to really understand the mitzvah. So we are on page 1, the Gemara and Ketubot. Tanu Rabbanan, the rabbis taught, the underlined portion towards the bottom. Tanu Rabbanan, Mevarchin Birkat Chatanim, Beveit Chatanim. The rabbi said you're supposed to say the bracha of the grooms in the house of the groom, meaning where they get married. Rabbi Yehuda Omerav Beveit Sa'erusin, Mevarchin Ota. Rabbi Yehuda says you even say it in the house of Erusin. In the olden days, there are really two stages to a Jewish marriage. There's the Kiddushin or Erusin. Those are synonyms, basically. And then there was the Nisuin. So nowadays, we do them both together. You ever wonder why do they read the Ketubah under the Chuppah? Why do they read this long Aramaic text? Every wedding you've been to, they read the Ketubah under the chuppah, right? It's this long Aramaic text. Nobody knows what it's about. Nobody knows what it means. They might as well do something else. So the tradition to read the Ketubah under the chuppah is in order to separate the two sections of the marriage. First, the Kiddushin, where the rabbi says the bracha, and then the groom says, Harayat Mekudeshet Li, and hands the bride the ring. Then they read the Ketubah in order to make a time difference. In the olden days, in the days of the Talmud, that was 1 year. They used to do Kiddushin first. That was the engagement, the betrothal. And then there would be a year where the groom, the prospective groom, who is now linked to a woman, had to go find a job and establish himself. And then a year later, they would have the Nisuin. Nowadays, we just read the Ketubah in the middle, and that's the only time difference. The Nisuin is the Sheva Brachos, and that's a different topic. That's really the topic of Masechet Ketubot. But so there's a debate between the rabbis and Rabbi Yehuda as to whether we say the bracha, Birkat Chatanim, in the home of the Birkat Chatanim, during the Nisuin or during the Erusin, during the second part or during the first part. Amar Rabbaye, Uve Yehuda Shanu, Nepnesha Mityachedima, and they taught this in Yehuda because he was going to be alone with her, have yichud with her. So that's why you need the bracha. Meaning the yichud only comes after the nisuin, after the second part of the marriage, the being alone with the wife. And so Abaye said that in Yehuda they only said it during the nisuin stage because that's when. In the Erusin, because that's when they would have Yichud together. So that's what Rashi says. Shemit Yechedima be Erusin kedei sheli bo gasba kedei lekaman. So they had Yichud. We don't have Yichud now between Erusin and Nisuin. I don't know that I guess there were difference of practice because Abaye says. At least Rashi explains that the bracha should come during Erusin so that he should really fall in love with her and really feel a romantic need for the woman. Okay, not sure why. Okay, Tanya Idach, here comes. So there used to be one bracha, and there was a debate between whether the bracha should be
in the Erusin or in the Nisuin. But then there's another Braisa. We're in the fourth line. Tanya Idach, Mevarchin Birkas Chasanim, Beveis Chasanim, Uvirkas Erusin, Beveisa Erusin. Please pass the source packet to. The other Braisa says there are two different brachos. It's not one bracha. There are two brachos. There's a Birkas Chasanim, the bracha for the Nisuin, which happens in the second stage, and a bracha for Erusin, and that's a different bracha. Birkat Erusin Mai Mevarech. What is the Birkat Erusin? What is the language of the bracha? Rabin Barav Ada, Viraba Barav Ada, Travayu Mishmei Derav Yehuda Amre. All the rabbis that we just listed, they said the following is the bracha, and this is the bracha that every rabbi recites under the chuppah. Baruch Ata Hashem Elokeinu Melech HaOlam. That's the Bet Aleph Yud Aleph Mem Hey. That's Baruch Ata Hashem Elokeinu Melech HaOlam. Asher Kideshanu B'mitzvotav V'tzivanu Al Ha'arayot. Blessed are you, Lord our God, who commanded us with His commandments and commanded us with the arayot. What are arayot? Forbidden sexual relations. Who commanded us regarding forbidden sexual relations? Ve'asar lanu et ha'arusot, and prohibited those to whom we are betrothed. Meaning the betrothal is not enough, right? Asar lanu et ha'arusot. We're prohibited to have relations with those to whom we are betrothed, or those who are betrothed to us. V'hitir lanu et hanesuot lanu al yedei chupa, v'hitir lanu et hanesuot al yedei chupa v'kidushin. And who permitted us, those who, with whom we are completely married, through chupa and kidushin. Okay. So, that's the bracha that the rabbis recite under the chupa, more or less. How is this bracha different from every other bracha we recite before performing a mitzvah? Can anybody have a suggestion for what's another birkat mitzvah?
Usually, you say the bracha and then you do the.
That's right. So you do that here as well. Mm-hmm. So normally, for example, Asher kedeshanu b'mitzvotav v'tzivanu al natilat lulav, right? To shake the lulav, that's a mitzvah. So we say the bracha on the mitzvah. How is this bracha different from all those other brachos?
It's conditional thing, you know. If we were supposed to do it this way, you know, kind of.
Okay.
Which you don't hear that much in the other
one. Okay, so first of all, it's conditional, right? We're saying this during the kiddushin, but then nothing can really take place until after the nisuin. Right, al yedei chupa v'kiddushin. Chupa is nisuin. Chupa is not kiddushin. The kiddushin, the harayat mekudeshat li, the first part does not need to take place under the chupa, in principle. I mean, it does practically, but it does not need to.
And it did.
No, we said that already. It didn't used to. So that's number one. So number one, there seems to be some kind of extra condition built into the bracha. But you have one other very big difference between this bracha. That's right. The bracha is over that which is forbidden. It's not baruch ata. You would expect if I said we're going to write a bracha about kiddushin, so you might have expected the bracha to be baruch ata Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam Asher Kiddushanu Mitzvotav Et Tzivanu Al Mitzvat Kiddushin or Lekadesh Et Haisha or something along those lines. Not baruch ata Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam Asher. We don't like, you know, every time I pass by McDonald's, I don't say baruch ata Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam. Asher kideshanu v'tzivanu mitzvotah, asher kideshanu v'tzivanu ala trefot v'astar lanu et hachazir. We don't say that. Right? We don't say that. There's no other bracha that I can think of. The bracha is about a positive commandment to get married, but the bracha, the language of the bracha focuses on that which is prohibited, not that which is permitted.
The only thing is the one that says, that we don't, that it, blessed art thou, Lord our God, who has not made me a woman. That's sort of on the level, but not
okay, but that, so that you're right, that's a negative, all those brachot, those three brachot we say in Birkot HaShachar are all phrased in the negative. Shelo asani goy, shelo asani aved, all of those are negative, but those are Birkot HaShevach, those are general praise blessings. They're not mitzvah blessings. So you don't say asher kedishanu b'mitzvotav et sivanu on something that is prohibited, generally speaking. I mean, otherwise, we wouldn't stop saying brachos all day long. I mean, there's plenty of things that are prohibited. Okay. I mean, I guess the real parallel wouldn't be when you pass by McDonald's. The real parallel would be when you the parallel might be when you eat kosher food. Before you eat the kosher food, you should say the bracha that God prohibited the non-kosher food. Okay, but that's not the bracha. There is no such bracha. So indeed, a number of the commentaries, a number of the Rishonim, derived from this. That there is no mitzvah to get married. There is no such commandment. We're going to skip page 2, where he says the same thing basically as page 3. Page 2 is the Mordechai. Page 3 is the Rosh. The Rosh is a little bit more detailed, so we'll just read that. Page 3, Rabbeinu Asher. He asks the questions about the bracha. Yesh makshin, there are those who find difficulties al nusach bracha zo. On the language of this bracha. Lama ein mevarchin asher kidushanu b'mitzvotav etzivanu lekadesh et ha'isha. Why don't we say the bracha that God commanded us to betroth a woman, to sanctify a woman? That's another, we'll discuss in the next class, next couple of classes, we'll discuss why the language is that of kidushin. That's not the topic for right now. Number one, why is the bracha not phrased in the positive? That's his first question. Number two, v'od, heichan matzinu bracha kazot shemevarchin al ma she'asar lanu HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Where have we ever seen a bracha that we say on that which God prohibited us? Question number two. V'halo, ein anu mevarchin she'asar lanu ever menachai v'hitir lanu et hashachut. When a ritual slaughter, when a shochet is about to shecht an animal, he says, Asher kedushanu b'mitzvanu al ha-shechita. Then he does the shechita. He doesn't say, Asher asar lanu eiver menachai, who prohibited us from eating live limbs of animals, and commanded us to shecht the animals. There is no such other bracha. That's number three. That's the part number two. Ve'od, ma inyan lahazkir arayot bekan. And thirdly, why does the bracha mention the forbidden sexual relations? What do we add? What do we add to the bracha by mentioning that? Ve'od, number four, malanu lahazkir chupa bekan kivan shemevarchin berkat erusin beveita erusin velo b'chupa. Why does it mention the chupa if we don't say this bracha in the chupa? I mean, we do now practically, but you don't have. In principle, it's not said in the chuppah. So, four questions. Number one, why isn't it phrased in the positive? Number two, why is it phrased in the negative? I guess those are two sides of the same question. Number three, why mention the arayos? Why mention the forbidden sexual relations? And number four, why mention the chuppah if this bracha need not take place under the chuppah? And the answers, the third to last underlined line in the first section of the underlines. V'nirali ki bracha zo eina bracha la'asiyat mitzvah. Seems to me that this bracha is not a regular birkat mitzvah. It's not a bracha that we recite before doing a mitzvah. Ki piriya v'rivya hainu kiyum ha-mitzvah. Because the mitzvah is having children. Not getting married. The im lakach pilegesh v'kiyam piriya v'rivya eino mechuyav l'kadesh isha. And if he had children through some other way, besides kiddushin, there is no obligation, according to the Rush, to get married. You're just having relations. Why is that a mitzvah? I mean, because the Osek the period of Arivia, because God would so. Yeah, it's possible. Yeah, so it could be that the mitzvah is just to have relate to the Osek the period of Arivia.
He's using Bia as the third part of the Kiddushin.
Okay. It could be.
Why wouldn't there be a bracha?
Well, there can't be a bracha. That's a good question in general. The Gemara asked that question. The answer is, the reason why there's no bracha, even though sexual relations is a mitzvah, there's no bracha on that because there's no practical way to recite that bracha in a way that is tanua, in a way that is modest. There's no practical way of doing that. There's a I'm going to pause.
Okay.
So Rabbi Baum's are suggesting because there are four questions that God asks us when we go to meet our Maker, so to speak, and according to the Talmud, and one of those questions is asakta bepuria verivia, means did you deal with having children, which means did you have it either means did you have sexual relations, it means did you have children, did you help children, all those things are asok bepuria verivia, to deal with the idea of continuing our tradition. So maybe puria verivia is a a symbolic language for that, maybe. Yeah. Right.
Well, I can't be a bracha on that.
On what?
Like lasso bit dealing with children.
So what? Okay, yeah. you're always when wouldn't you say the bracha? Well, that's right. There's also, it's interesting to note, there are no brachos on Bein Adam L'Chaveiro. Period of a rivio could be a Bein Adam L'Chaveiro. We don't say brachos on Bein Adam L'Chaveiro. Okay. So, but he says, in any event, he basically says that the fact of getting married is not a mitzvah. I think the simple understanding of the Rush is that there is a mitzvah to have children. I think that's the simple understanding of the Rush. It could be that there are other ways of interpreting it, but according to the Rush, the basic mitzvah is to have children. If somebody had children in some other way, then they don't need to get married. Pilegish means, it's a concubine. If somebody had a concubine, like Hagar, right, Avram and Hagar. So if somebody had children through not their wife, then they don't need to get married. There's no mitzvah.
So children out of wedlock
is not a big deal. So nowadays it's impossible to have children without getting married, according to Jewish law, because there is no permissible mechanism to have children without. We don't have pilagshim today. I mean, there were some that suggested we should reinstate it, but it's ridiculous. It would be terrible if we reinstated concubinehood today. No, that's right. No, that's right. In halach, like a bastard. Exactly. So that a mamzer is not a child born out of wedlock. That's right. That's right. If a child is born out of wedlock in Jewish law, there is no stigma associated with it, unless the child is born to a forbidden sexual relation. So so Aisha said, for example, if a woman is married and has a child with another man, that kid is a mamzer. Yeah. So, but a child just born out of wedlock to a young millennial couple living in the city, that's not. There's no stigma. There's no halachic stigma associated with that. Okay. So then he says, "V'hilkach." We're going to skip to the underlined. "V'hilkach lo nitkena bracha b'mitzvah zo." Therefore, there is no bracha for getting married because it's not a mitzvah. You might say it's a hechsher mitzvah. It's one way. A hechsher mitzvah is something that you do in order to allow yourself to do a mitzvah. So, for example, when Rabbi Serebransky makes tefillin, it's not a mitzvah to make tefillin, but if he didn't make tefillin, other people couldn't put on tefillin. So that's a hechsher mitzvah. To do something that is necessary or one way of fulfilling a mitzvah, that's a hechsher mitzvah.
Like giving a hechsher to food.
Okay, maybe, yeah.
Well, the mikvah fits into the same
matir. The mikvah is a matir, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, but there is a bracha on toveling in the mikvah. A hechsher mitzvah is an action which makes possible the fulfillment of a mitzvah. So, for example, is building a sukkah. There is a bracha that people say on building a sukkah, but there's a question as to whether building a sukkah really is a mitzvah. Building a sukkah is probably just a hechsher mitzvah. There's a mitzvah to sit in the sukkah. So if you want to sit in the sukkah, you're going to have to build a sukkah, otherwise you can't sit in a sukkah. So building a sukkah is a hechsher mitzvah for sitting in the sukkah. Hechsher mitzvah. It's machshir, it permits, it makes possible the doing of the mitzvah. So according to the Rush, marriage is merely a hechsher mitzvah for having children. There are other hechsherei mitzvah for having children, like pilegesh, which we don't do today. So that's what he continues. He says, v'hilkach lo nitkana bracha b'mitzvah zo. V'af b'no se'isha l'shem piri v'rivya. Even if someone does get married in order to have children, keivan, and there's a misprint here, it should be keivan she'efshar l'kayem mitzvat piri v'rivya below kiddushin. The commentaries note there was some kind of scribal error here, or a copy error, something like that. So the commentaries note that it should not be she'efshar, it should be she'efshar. That's why it's in parentheses. Otherwise, it doesn't make sense. Since you can fulfill the mitzvah through another way, kevan she'efshar l'kayem mitzvah t'piriyah v'riviyah below kiddushin, velo dami l'shchita. And it's not the same as shchita. You cannot eat kosher meat without shchita. Shchita is the only way of getting kosher meat. So even though shchita also, well, shchita might also be a mitzvah. The Rush is going to talk about that in a minute. Right? We're not each of us is not commanded with shechting an animal. You know, if I live my entire life and never shecht an animal, it's not like I missed out. I'm not obligated to. It's not like, you know, making kiddush on Friday night. You know, it's not necessary to do shechita. I can live my entire life and not do shechita. And the world can go on without shechita too. If people don't want to eat meat, if everybody decides to become a vegetarian, then you don't have to have shechita. It's not necessary. It's also only a kind of a hechsher mitzvah. So even though the lo dami l'shechita, it's not the same as shechita. She'enu mechuyav l'shot v'le'echol. You don't have to do shechita. V'afilu hachi k'shu shochet l'echol mevarech. T'hatam i'efshar lo l'echol below shechita. But the mitzvah is still a positive, the bracha on shechita is still a positive one upon the shechita. Sher kedishanu b'mitzvotah v'tzivanu ala shechita. That's still a positive blessing. Says the Rush, this doesn't contradict my statements regarding marriage, because regarding having children, there are other ways in principle in halacha to have children besides marriage. But there's no other way. If somebody wants to eat a cow, there's no other way to eat a cow besides shechita. So they have to do it. I mean, the fact that you want to eat a cow commands you in a certain sense to do shechita. But you could do have children that kiddushin. And then I'll just tell you what he says. He says that, so we don't have to read the whole thing, but he says that the language in the Torah with regards to shechita is the language of mitzvah. You shall shecht, right? You should, meaning it's in a positive, imperative language, in the imperative voice. You shall shecht, and you shall eat. So that's why there's a positive commandment, and that's why there's. But when it comes to marriage, the language is not v'kidashta et ha'isha. There is no pasuk v'kidashta et ha'isha. You know that in there's a difference between vekidashta and vekidashta. The difference is vekidashta is in the past tense and it's descriptive. It tells one has sanctified. Vekidashta is the grammatical form of a commandment. Thou shalt sanctify. That's when you bench. It's important to note that in benching, people say v'achalta v'savata uveirachta, but that's not correct. It's v'achalta v'savata uveirachta. You shall eat, and when you are satiated, you shall bless. Because otherwise, you're saying, when you have eaten, and you were satiated, and you blessed. But you're talking about a commandment to bless. Uveirachta, not uveirachta. They mean different things. So, the same thing here. There is no v'kidashta et ha'isha. It's ki ikach ishisha, if you want to get married, you should do this. You should follow this procedure. So it's all in the verse, in the Torah, it's all written in the conditional.
The
It's a korban. Yeah. Right. Is specifically about the korban. Okay. So that's the view that kiddushin is not even a mitzvah. It's only a way to enable us to have children. There's another view. The other view, of course, is that kiddushin is a mitzvah. Because if you look at the... take a look at the next page. Page 4. It's not labeled proper. It didn't come out in the copy, but it's page 4. It's from the very beginning of the second chapter of Kiddushin, which we're not studying. We're studying the first chapter. But the very beginning of the second chapter implies that Kiddushin is a mitzvah. Ha'ish mekadesh bo v'shlucho. Ha'isha mitkadeshet bo v'shlucha. So the Mishnah says that a man can betroth a woman by himself or through an emissary, through a messenger. It means if I want to, if a man lives in New York City and he wants to have kiddushin with a woman in Albany, he doesn't have to schlep all the way to Albany. He could send a messenger. He says, "Go, you know." So normally kiddushin, you say harayat mekudeshet li. In this case, the messenger would go to the woman and say harayat mekudeshet la Jonathan. And that would work. Halachically, that works. So they don't need to... And the woman could also send the messenger. And accept the betrothal on... The messenger can accept the betrothal on behalf of the woman. Ha'isha mitkadeshet ba'u v'shlucha.
Can you Skype it?
Good question. good. So the Gemara now asks... So the Gemara is going to note that there is a superfluity in this Mishnah. Because... if you're allowed to do something through a messenger, then obviously you're also allowed to do it yourself. So we believe that the Mishnah's words are terse, and that the Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, in formulating the Mishnah, used as few words as possible. And so, Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, according to the logic of the Gemara, the Mishnah could have just said, Ha'ish mekadesh bishlucho, v'ha'isha mitkadeshet bishlucha. The Mishnah could have just said that a man betroths a woman through a messenger, and a woman can get betrothed through a messenger. Because we would have naturally understood that if it can be done with a messenger, it can also be done by yourself. There is no such thing as a mitzvah which can only be done by a messenger and can't be done by you. So there is a chiddush. The novel idea in the Mishnah is that you could do it with a messenger. I might have thought that you want to get married, well, you better be there yourself. And I recommend being there yourself. But the chiddush in the Mishnah is that you don't have to be there. So the Gemara says, yeah.
Was an emissary for Ruth.
That's right. Hashta bishlucho mekadesh bo mibaya. If I know, so the Gemara now says, I'm on the fourth line where it says Gimel Mem for Gemara. Hashta b'shlucho mekadesh, bo mibaya. If I know that you can get married through an emissary, through a messenger, why do I need the Mishnah to say bo? Why do I need the Mishnah to tell me that a man is allowed to be mekadesh, to betroth the woman on his own? And he answers, Amar of Yosef, mitzvah bo yoter mi b'shlucho. It's a greater mitzvah to do it yourself than it is to do it through an emissary, to do it through a messenger. And there is such a general principle in mitzvot. If you have the option to do a mitzvah by yourself or through a messenger, it's preferable to do it yourself. That's mitzvah bo yoter mi b'shlucho. That's a general principle. That's why Yemenites, we just had a Yemenite fellow here, but in a Yemenite wedding, the rabbi doesn't say Birkat Erusin. The chatan, the groom, says Birkat Erusin. He does it himself. Because mitzvah bo yoter mi b'shlucho. The reason why in all of our weddings, the rabbi says Birkat Erusin, even though it should seem that the rabbi shouldn't say it. So it seems like if a groom is able to recite the bracha, the groom should recite the bracha by himself. So the reason why...
What?
Yeah?
Say the brothers himself.
Who?
Aaron, who sits here and recites for her husband, is from Uzbekistan.
Oh. Oh, interesting. Very good. Feigenbaum? Oh, Zweigenbaum. Oh, Aaron said it himself. The Bukharian couple. Oh, very good. Interesting. So I didn't know Bukharians do it too. Apparently they do. But the reason why in Ashkenazi communities, the rabbi always says the bracha, because everybody should have the opportunity to get married, including men who don't speak Hebrew and don't understand how to say a bracha, don't know how to say the bracha. And so in order to make it kind of equal playing field, a level playing field for everybody, we always have the rabbi say the bracha so that a groom won't be embarrassed. That's what the Rama writes. The groom shouldn't be embarrassed that he doesn't know how to say the bracha. So everybody should be able to get married. So that's why we do it. But really, what? Right. That's why we have a Baal Koreh read. Really, in principle, whoever gets the Aliyah should read the Aliyah. Whoever gets the Aliyah should read the Aliyah. That's how it was done. In Yemenite communities, that's how it's done. The Yemenite boys learn how to learn the entire Torah because when they get called up, they read the Torah. They read the Kriya. We don't do that because we want to kind of level the playing field. I think it's more important that we level the playing field for marriage than it is for Aliyah. But nonetheless, we do it for Aliyos also. Okay. There really is no other reason for the rabbi. Yeah, a rabbi is not necessary in principle for a wedding ceremony. You just need, in order for the kiddushin, you need two witnesses and a groom and a bride. And for the nisuin, you still need a minyan because you have to have a minyan. There's a misadar kiddushin. There's a need for a misadar kiddushin because there's a need for a Masadar Kiddushin because most people don't know all the rules about how to write a ksuba, how to do this, how to make sure everything happens correctly. So the role of the Masadar Kiddushin is to organize the chuppah. I once participated in a wedding where I was the couple's rabbi, and the couple wanted me to officiate, but the groom came from a family that was very connected with another rabbi in Far Rockaway, and they wanted him to officiate. So we co-officiated. He said the bracha, but I was the Masadir Kiddushin. So I kind of gave the Dvar Torah. I emceed the wedding, so to speak. And I oversaw the ksuba and I oversaw everything. But the other rabbi said the Birkas Eirusin. Okay. But this implies that what? The Mishnah or the Gemara implies that Kiddushin is a mitzvah. Nobody would tell you, Heksher mitzvah bo yoter mi b'shulcho. It's not better to build your own sukkah than it is to have somebody else build a sukkah. There's no such, maybe for your own spiritual feeling or whatever, but in terms of halacha, you don't fulfill the mitzvah of sitting in a sukkah in any kind of higher level if you built your own sukkah or if you didn't. If you wanted somebody else to build your sukkah, go for it. There's no better status to building your own sukkah. So, If this is not a mitzvah, then it would not be mitzvah bo yoter mi b'shlucho. Right? Okay, we're going to skip page 5. Indeed, on page 6, the Rambam in Sefer HaMitzvos enumerates Kiddushin as its own mitzvah. Mitzvah Reish Yod Gimel, the 213th positive commandment, is to Shehishetzivanu livol bekiddushin. It's a mitzvah to have relations as kiddushin. It's a mitzvah to get married. Completely different than the rush. It is a mitzvah to get married. And he expands upon it in the Mishnah Torah on the next page. Kol hamekadesh isha bein alidei atzmo bein alidei shaliach. Anybody who gets married to a woman, anybody who betroths a woman, whether by himself or through an emissary, through a messenger, tzarich levareich kodem hakiddushin, should say the bracha before the kiddushin. Ohu o shlucho. Either him or the messenger should say the bracha. Kederech shemevarchin al kol hamitzvot. Like one blesses every other mitzvah. Kederech shemevarchin al kol hamitzvot. V'acharkach mekadesh v'inkadesh v'lo birech lo yivarech achar hakiddushin. and then you do the Kiddushin, and if you did the Kiddushin without a bracha, you don't say a bracha later. Just like if you do any mitzvah. If you shake the lulav and you forgot to say the bracha first, you don't say the bracha afterwards. You only say a bracha on a mitzvah before you do the mitzvah. If you did the mitzvah without saying the mitzvah still counts, but you missed the bracha. There's no, you can't just say the bracha again, you know, for the sake of it. Shazo bracha levatala, ma shenasa kvar nasa. What's done is done. Ma shenasa kvar nasa. What's done is done. You did the mitzvah, you can't say the bracha, you know, after the mitzvah. It must be said before the mitzvah. So clearly the Rambam thinks that it is a mitzvah. Why? I think it has to do with the Rambam's entire view of marriage. If you look on page 8, the Rambam writes something that he doesn't write for most of the other mitzvot. For most of the halachot, the Rambam gives, in the Mishnah Torah, the Rambam just tells you what the rules are. But here, when it comes to the mitzvah of marriage, the Rambam gives a whole history of why the mitzvah of marriage came into being. He tells us what the status was before Torah and what it is after the Torah. And it's based, the Rambam's view here is based on the fact that we know that people had marriage before Torah, right? Non-Jews get married also. Indians, you know, and other idolatrous religions, everybody gets married. People get married all the time. The Torah didn't invent the notion of a man and a woman being together and, you know, building a household together. Okay? So what's the difference between the Jewish view and the non-Jewish view? Kodem Matan Torah. Now, by the way, today's non-Jewish view, I think, has been very much influenced by the Torah's view. So it's not, you know, but the Rambam explains what it was like before the Torah was given. Kodem Matan Torah. Haya Adam Pogea Isha Bashuk. Im Ratza Hu Vehili Sauta. Machnisa Latoch Beita Uvala Beino Levein Atzmo. Vetiyela Leisha. Before the Torah was given, if a man met a woman in the marketplace, or at a bar, or wherever, and they decided they wanted to get married, they wanted to be together, they wanted to establish a household together, then they went home together, they had relations between themselves, there were no witnesses or anything, there wasn't a public ceremony, they just got together, they went into their house, and they were married, Vatiel Elisha, that was it. That's how people got married. Kevan shenitna Torah. Since the Torah was given, it's Tavu Yisrael, Shim Yirtzeh Ish Lisa Isha, Yikneu Tatchila Befnei Edim. Since the Torah was given, the Torah commanded that when a man wants to wants to marry a woman, or when man and woman want to marry each other, it can't be done against the woman's will, then first he has to do Kiddushin in front of witnesses. What does in front of witnesses mean? What does it effectively mean? It means it has to be public. It has to be a ceremony, right? Nor there aren't so many ceremonies in Judaism. Generally speaking, we don't, in the modern day, we invented a whole bunch of ceremonies. But generally, in Judaism, there aren't so many ceremonies, public ceremonies. But there are a few things that are. And marriage always has been a public ceremony. It must be done as a public proclamation. The community must know that this man and woman are now married. Well, not just the loyalty, but what changed is the fact that it's Yadua Batzibur. It needs to be public knowledge. It can't just be private knowledge between the man and the woman that they want to be married and they want to have a wedding. It can't just be that they elope. But it must be a public thing that they get married. We'll discuss this later on in future classes. But the two witnesses in this case, in most cases, witnesses are there in order to verify that something happened. For example, when Rabbi Bamzer sells chametz to the non-Jew before Pesach, so he has two witnesses there that sign a document saying, yeah, we saw, he sold the chametz to the non-Jew. They're witnesses. There are two witnesses signed onto the document. Is that correct? There are witnesses signed on the document. We verify that this sale really took place. It is there to verify that something took place, that everybody knows that it really took place. Here, Kiddushin is not like that. Kiddushin, the witnesses are not there to verify that something took place. Without witnesses, the sale of chametz would still have taken place. right? The witnesses are there to verify. But without, Rabbi Bamzer could have, in principle, sold the chametz to the non-Jewish person without witnesses, and the sale would still be valid. It was just that there would be no way of verifying it. Yeah. So here, these are edim, what's called edim lekiyum hadavar, not edim lebeirur hadavar. The witnesses are there in order to establish something, not in order to verify something. Without the witnesses, there was no kiddushin. If a woman and a man go into a private room and he hands her a ring and he says the bracha and he says l'shem yichud before he says the bracha, he says, you know, he makes it a whole thing, and he hands her a ring and says areyat mekudesh li, and she accepts it and she puts it on her finger. According to halacha, they are not married. But if they do it in front of two kosher witnesses, they are. That creates problems sometimes in Jewish day schools. It happened in a Jewish day school at which I worked, where the kids were learning tractate kiddushin. And it's a joke, the two high school students that did, what? Every school they get married. Right, every school, little nursery kids get married. I mean, I know that. My wife was a kindergarten teacher. So kindergarten kids, they put on little wedding ceremonies all the time. And they got married to each other. But in this case, it was two high school students who, as a joke, did this, said harayat mekudesh adli. And clearly there were witnesses in the room. And so, I'm sorry?
The cracker jacks
ring. Yeah. That's right.
It's not a value, so that would be.
Yeah. That's right. So that's why. So in this case, I wasn't involved in this, but it happened in a school at which I worked many years ago, and the couple had to discuss it. They had to, you know, discuss it with a base, with a very well known halachic authority, who paskened that they were not married halachically because the witnesses, he paskened that the witnesses were not credible witnesses for various reasons. I don't want to get into it right now. We'll discuss it later on. Cohen, that's right. No, it's very important because otherwise he would have to give her a get, and the woman and the woman later on, when she really wanted to get married, if she fell in love with a Cohen, would not be allowed to marry a Cohen. So they had to. So the rabbi who paskened the question, a very well known posek in our community, obviously it's to everybody's benefit that the marriage never took place, and not that there's a divorce that takes place, and now this woman is forever a divorced woman, you know, in halacha. Not a good idea. So, one can envision a situation in which the in which they would have had to give a get, but obviously we want to avoid such a situation.
So the words are more powerful than their intention.
Yeah. Where the presence of the witnesses is really what's very powerful. The very present, the fact that it was done in public is what makes it powerful. Shene'emar, kivachakachtil isha, shene'emar, kikach ishisha uvaileha. Velikuchin elu mitzvat aseh shel Torahim. So I think that, first of all, just in terms of the Rambam's view, I think that in the Rambam's view, it's consistent with his general view of Torah and mitzvot. His general view, especially in the guide of the perplexed of Torah and mitzvot, is that halacha and the mitzvot are there to take natural ways of life and sanctify them and bring them towards a worship of God. That's why we have sacrifices. We don't have sacrifices because God needs me to shecht a lamb on the altar and, you know, God thinks that the fat tastes good. That's not why we have sacrifices. We have sacrifices, according to the Rambam, according to Maimonides, because in the olden days, in the ancient Near East, sacrifice was a normal way of life. And so God created a mitzvah in order to direct sacrifices towards worship of Him, in order to direct them in a holier way. And so too, this entire paragraph in the Rambam explains why marriage is a mitzvah. Marriage is a mitzvah because marriage was always the natural mode of existence. Marriage naturally happened in the world. Everybody got married. And so the Torah gave us a mitzvah in order to redirect that natural mode towards a holier, more holy way of existence. So as opposed to, I think that this view that marriage is a mitzvah is consistent with the Rambam's general approach, that the mitzvot take, right, eating is a natural thing, so the Torah gives us ways in which we eat to make it holy, or kosher, or bracha, whatever it is. So all the mitzvot are there to take natural things and make them holy. Same thing here. Marriage is a natural thing. Everybody does marriage. We make it holy in this way. Which we'll get to in future lectures. Okay. But I would like to add that there is another element to this, besides the fact that it's consistent with the Rambam's view. I think that marriage is both a mitzvah unto itself and a hechsher mitzvah for creating a family. Because both of these, both the Rush's view and the Rambam's view, are basically, I think, reflective of two different aspects of marriage, which Rav Soloveitchik wrote about, and we'll read his words in a minute, but which really emanate from the first two chapters of Bereishit. A lot of Rav Soloveitchik's philosophy has to do with the differences between chapter 1 of Genesis and chapter 2 of Genesis, with the two different stories of creation. And in both stories of creation, we have man and woman. But the reason for man and woman and the mitzvah that they are given are different in the two stories. Take a look at page 9. Vayivra Elohim et ha'adam. So from chapter 1. Vayivra Elohim et ha'adam et salmo, betzelem Elohim barauto, zachar nekeva barautam. God created man in his image. In his image he created him. Man and woman he created them. So God creates man and woman together. Vayevarech otam Elohim. God bless them. Vayomer lahem Elohim prur vu umilu et haaretz vechivshuha. And God says to them, be fruitful and multiply, fill the land and dominate it. No mention of emotional life of marriage, of spiritual life of marriage. The point of man and woman here is a very technical one. And that's the Rav in Lonely Man of Faith in other places wrote that the first chapter of Genesis, of Bereishit, is the technical chapter. It's the chapter about scientific living, about biology, and about, you know, that's what chapter 1 is about. So man and woman are created, they are commanded to fill the world. Chapter 2. So God first created man, and then he says, "Vayomer Hashem Elokim, lo tov hiyot ha'adam levado, eselo ezer kenegdo." Chapter 2, the story is very different. God creates man, and he says, it's not good for man to be alone. I'll create him ezer kenegdo. What's ezer kenegdo? A helpmate. An equal helpmate, kenegdo, ezer kenegdo. So they can live together in a, right, because man is lonely. I think this is true, you know, woman alone would be lonely too. I mean, I don't want to make this a gender thing, you know. Either way, being alone is lonely, and we need people, you know, we create these relationships in order to be together. And so the Rav writes in Family, in an essay in Family Redeemed, about two theories of marriage, both are of which are present in the Jewish tradition. There are two basic theories about the institution of marriage. One theory developed a transunt axiology. I don't really know how to pronounce that word, so you'll have to excuse me. Transunt is outer-directed, while immanent is inner-directed. That is, a value system that finds the meaning of matrimony outside the matrimonial union. E.g., having children. The other theory developed an immanent matrimonial value system, discovering meaning within. According to proponents of the transient value system, marriage is committed to promoting the welfare of the group. The latter's survival is the main goal pursued by the two individuals united in marriage. It is irrelevant whether the term group is understood. Okay, what is significant in the transient theory is the idea that the collective is sovereign over the individual, and that marriage actually places the two individuals at the service of society. Our marriage is here to serve society. How so? By having children and educating our children to continue our society and to build it. It denies the unique and specific in the marital union of the two humans. It sees the union within the natural scheme of things, comparing it to the process of pollination in the vegetative world or seasonal mating in the zoological kingdom, where indeed the existence of the individual plant or animal makes sense only within the context of the species. That is the purely biological aspect of marriage. But there's another aspect. The theory of immanent axiology shifts the center of gravity from without to within the matrimonial union. Accordingly, the main value of marriage is to be found not in its collective utility, but in its creating a personal experience that enriches and enhances the lives of two individuals who are drawn to each other. Humans, this immanent theory of meaning argues, thirst for love and fellowship. They crave life and community, personalistic union, sharing destiny with somebody of the opposite sex. In marriage, they find fulfillment. Procreation, according to this philosophy, is not the central theme of marriage. A childless marriage is just as sacred as one blessed with offspring, since the meaningfulness of the matrimonial union is to be found in the self-fulfillment of the wedded partners themselves, rather than in the benefits which accrue to society. Thus, matrimonial individualism substitutes for matrimonial collectivism and romanticism for utilitarianism. Basically, there are two aspects of marriage. One, which I think the Rush focused on, the utilitarian aspect of marriage, the fact that marriage is there in order to allow for us to serve society by having children, educating children, and so forth. But the other aspect is the one that the Rambam focused on, that man and woman naturally want to be together. That's what happened in the world before Matan Torah, according to the Rambam. Right? People always wanted to be together. And so marriage is also this romantic, individualist union for two people who love each other and wish to live together, to be able to be together. And I think certainly the Rav wrote this. I mean, that's just the beginning of the essay, and he goes on expanding upon those two points. But those together create the meaning of the Jewish marriage, that dual nature of the natural, biological, utilitarian aspect together with the romantic, individual, emotional, spiritual aspect of marriage. And so now we can go on and continue studying our Tractate Kiddushin in order to see what are the details that go into this institution.